meetings to let you know that we apologize to you for starting with the thing. Okay, can we then start? Today is the annual report of the public protector. Just for the benefit of the public protector and anyone else who wasn't here earlier on in the week, the chairperson, Mr. Ramaswamy, is in the Judicial Service Commission hearings. I think they're finalising voting today, so it's obviously definitely today is not the day he could not be there. And I then was asked to chair. There have also been other challenges in terms of conflicting study of another portfolio committee, which has quite a big overlap, going on a study trip and that taking away a number of members. But to welcome you, to say sorry we are a bit short-staffed. From the Parliament side, or from the MP side rather, it's I think you should know everybody, but it's Llewellyn Landers at the back there looking at his phone from the ANC, Mr. Ntapane from the UDM, Debbie Schaefer from the Democratic Alliance, and JB Sibanyoni from the ANC. So I think, and then myself, John Jeffrey, ANC. Public Protector, then over to you, but maybe you'd like to start by just introducing your team, and maybe that should be everybody, not just the senior people. If you've flown people here or brought people here, let's hear who they are. So if there are people at the back who are employed by your office, introduce them too. Over to you, Public Protector.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Jeffrey, and thank you to members of the committee for an opportunity again to address you on our annual report. The members of my office that are accompanying me, starting from my right, the Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Themba Mteto, the Chief Financial Officer, Mr. J.D. Mpulu, the Acting Senior Executive Support Head of the Private Office in the Public Protector at the moment, Sillo Mutupi, Acting Head of Communications, Oba Sefane, and Strategy Executive Support Manager, Senior Manager Executive Support in the CEO's office, Ms. Bonafiello. The people at the back are not from my office, Honorable Chairperson. I would like to apologize that normally we run our office in Cape Town, but we have a Public Protector Focus Week, and the people in Cape Town are all over the province trying to spread the message about the office. I will then proceed. The contents of the presentation basically follow the report, which I hope honourable members still have a copy of. So I'm not going to go through the contents page so that I don't waste your time. I will just go straight to the foreword. Basically, this is what we've highlighted, Honourable Chair, that the year that we are reporting on was an important year in the history of the Public Protector South Africa. This is the year when the institution of the Ombudsman was turning 200 years, and everyone all over the world was celebrating the Institute and reviewing how it has performed and how it has supported democracies and provided citizens with an accessible mechanism to get justice when they feel wronged by the state. For us, as a Public Protector, it was an important year because we were completing 14 years of operation and commencing our 15th anniversary, which today, by the way, is the 15th anniversary of the province. Advocate Barco started operating 15 years ago today. It is also my first anniversary because I started to work today on the 15th of October last year. The period was also a period of review for the Public Protector in that two terms had just ended, and it gave us an opportunity to look at the progress that had been achieved and the lessons that had been learned from the 14 years of operation. We have entitled the report, Helping the State to Remedy Its Service Failures, to highlight the fact that the Public Protector as an ombudsman institution primarily assists the state with service failures, whilst progressively facilitating changes that ensure good governance and proper administration, or good administration as they would say in Europe. You will see in the report, Honourable Chairperson and members, that it will reveal that we have then, because of the review period, we have then, our vision has shifted slightly and our strategic objectives have shifted slightly. And that was due to a mandate analysis that we did during the period under review, and it was also due to extensive stakeholder consultations. So we spent therefore the last 5 months of the period under review reorganizing the office with a view to enhancing adherence to the Constitution and with a view to deploying the little resources that we have as smartly as we can to ensure effectiveness and efficiency. The outcomes of the mandate analysis facilitated by the stakeholder consultation process are the following. We have a book that we have distributed to members and additional copies can be obtained that outlines all the legislation and constitutional provisions that give a mandate to the public protector. We now have a sharper focus on remedial action as envisaged in Section 182 of the Constitution. We are trying to enhance the rigor or the intensity and thoroughness of our investigation. We've committed ourselves and instituted action to reduce turnaround times. The report will also show that the organizational restructuring, there's been organizational restructuring and work reorganization accompanied by reorientation of our people to change the focus and values in alignment with the vision and strategy. You would be happy to know that part of the work we did was really to implement the recommendations of the Auditor General. Last year we had received a qualified audit and we then implemented the recommendations that they given us in the management letter, and we are happy to say we now have an unqualified audit report. Doesn't obviously mean that we've cleaned up every little mistake that they've spoken about. This year we're focusing on cleaning the last issues that they had pointed out. I will now go just very quickly to the constitutional mandate. The constitutional mandate of the public protector is to, the public protector is given a constitutional mandate to investigate any conduct in state affairs in state affairs or the public or in the public administration in any sphere of government that is alleged or suspected to be improper, to result in any impropriety or prejudice. The public protector must report on that conduct and take appropriate remedial action. The public protector has additional powers spelled out in legislation, and an analysis of that legislation reveals 6 key mandate areas. The first one is an investigation of maladministration, abuse of power, abuse of resources, and resolving disputes involved alleged improper or prejudicial conduct by organs of state through mediation, conciliation, negotiation, or any other appropriate means under the Public Protector Act. As part of that mandate, the Public Protector is required to ensure that complainants get redress. The second mandate area is to investigate alleged violations of the Executive Ethics Code under the Executive Members Ethics Act of 1998. The third mandate area is investigating alleged violations of the Prevention and Combating of Corrupt Activities Act of 1994. The fourth mandate area is to resolve disputes under the Promotion of Access to Information Act of 2000. Fifth area is receiving disclosures from whistleblowers under the Protected Disclosures Act of 2000. And the last key mandate area is reviewing decisions of the National Home Builders Registration Council under the Housing Protection Measures Act of 1998. Section 182(4) of the Constitution requires the public protector to be accessible to all persons and communities. Based on this mandate, we have then crafted an institutional performance framework which includes a summarized mandate, which I'm not going to read here, but it is in the annual report, and then a vision, which we have presented to this committee several times. I think for the vision, I will just indicate that it highlights the kinds of administrative wrongs that the state that need to be corrected, that the state should act fairly. The state should be accountable. The state should have responsive decision making. It should have proper service and good governance. Those are the key areas that are highlighted in the vision, as you can see it. In the mission, as part of strengthening constitutional democracy, the two are highlighted: investigating, rectifying, and redressing all of this improper conduct or prejudicial conduct from the state. And the other thing that is highlighted is how the disputes are resolved. It's mediation, conciliation, negotiation, and other measures. And then what we've also highlighted is what should be the outcomes of our action, is that the state should act fairly, responsively, accountably, and in terms of both the decision making and the service it delivers. Honorable Chair, we've re-looked at our values, and we had very slight changes there. We kept most of the values that we had, and we kept most of the principles. Basically, in terms of the principles, we're still governed by the principles of public administration in Chapter 10 of the Constitution. We're governed by particular principles and principles of the global, and what we regard as global ombudsman principles. Based on that, we have isolated three core principles, which are accountability, integrity, and responsiveness. And then these are the values which are primarily the same. I think some of the new highlights are independence and impartiality, human dignity, equality, ubuntu, which may not have been highlighted in the previous one, redress, and the whole question of justice. Fairness was there, but we've just added the element of justice. I will move to the pledge that we have made in terms of the services that the institution of the public protector has to deliver. These the service pledge is derived from the strategic objectives for the year 2010 to 2013. We promise Parliament and the people of South Africa to do the following: to be accessible to and trusted by all persons and communities, to take prompt remedial action, and to promote good governance in the conduct of all state affairs. This will be made possible through institutional changes that seek to do the following: to build an effective and efficient organization, and to build an optimal performance culture and service-focused culture. All of these are really the five strategic objectives that will be informing or have been informing activities in the year that we'll come back and talk to you about. general overview, we've already said that this is a period that covers two periods, and that's why maybe we're going to talk about two visions. What I've indicated now is the vision that we adopted during that period, but I'm now about to indicate the vision that informed the work that we did, the work that we are reporting on today. This is the vision. It was to be one of the leading public protector or ombudsman institutions in the world. That was our vision. The strategic objectives then were to be one of the leading public protector institutions in the world, to ensure that all allegations of improper conduct by the state and its entities are investigated, reported, and appropriate remedial action taken. 3, to ensure accessibility to services provided by the Office of the Public Protector to all persons and communities. 4, to ensure the efficient and effective management and leadership of the Office of the Public Protector. And lastly, we sought to ensure a high-performance culture by attracting and retaining highly competent and skilled individuals. It is important to note the change in the new vision. The key change is a focus on the people of South Africa as opposed to be a leading institution in the entire world. The second change in terms of where we are going now is that the strategic plan is more or less the same when it comes to the strategic objectives, but the key changes are split, which wasn't in the previous one. We've now added promptness when we're talking about remedial action, and we've also added a new strategic objective, which is to promote good governance as a lasting legacy of our interaction and interface with the state. It's important to us that when we interact with the state, we don't only correct the wrong that is committed against the one individual, but that we also facilitate a long-term change so that no other people suffer the same fate. And that has changed a bit in how we deal with departments. In that, for example, whilst in the past, once your welfare grant had been granted, we would leave the department alone, or once you got your ID, we would leave the department alone. But now we want answers. Why, in the first instance, was there a delay? And secondly, to make sure that the department understands the impact of their action, to apologize and do things like that, and make sure that the same doesn't happen to the next person. I now want to just go quickly, Honourable Chairperson and members, to our performance against our constitutional mandate. Last year we received 16,236 cases. We only accepted jurisdiction in respect of 12,316 of those. The rest were rejected. Some of them didn't fall under our jurisdiction. Others were referred to other entities in accordance with our discretional powers in terms of Section 6(3) of the Public Protector Act. In the end, we finalized 14,736 cases. The increase in the number is because of the cases that had been carried over from the previous year. 2,987 of the cases that we received fell outside the jurisdiction of the public protector and were then sent elsewhere through advice and referrals. Within these, 933 were referred to competent oversight agencies. We issued 44 formal reports. You will see elsewhere in the report that it says we issued 45 reports. My apology for the mistake. Initially, we had counted 45, but one of the reports we withdrew much later because it had been issued, it had been sent out by mistake. The remedial action was inadequate. The summary of key achievements in terms of statistics. The next page we have here just shows what we received from each province, like national, and then the respective different units in national, and then from all of the provinces. I don't know, Honourable Chairperson, whether I should go through all of those figures or should I just ask the House to note?
We can note. I think similarly with a lot of, I'm just a bit worried about the time because it's quite a long presentation.
Yeah.
A lot of what is here is in the annual report, so just highlight, I think.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Honourable Chair. Right. I think the next slide is important, just to show that we're really trying to improve turnaround times. And it would be important then that members, when we come next day, evaluate and see whether what we're trying to do is really improving the turnaround times. In the year under review, 52% of the cases were resolved within 3 months, within 0 to 3 months. 18% were resolved within a period of 4 to 6 months. 19% within 7 to 12 months. And then 11%, 13 months or over. Our intention is to try and not have any cases that go over a year, and in the long term to actually restrict investigations to up to 6 months. I would just say the bulk of the cases came from four departments. The top of the range was the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, mostly issues around appeals and delays in the courts. The second group was municipalities as a collective, where we received, from justice we received 1,918 cases, from municipalities 1,543 cases, and then the third batch came from Home Affairs, 1,501 case, and SASA, between SASA and Social Development, 1,333. Then the next one was from Government Employee Pension Fund, which was 684. And then the top 10, you can see it there. Labor is primarily workers' compensation and UIF. We have sought to harness our institutional powers and we've restructured the organization. We've briefed Parliament before about how we've reorganized the organization to have an early resolution unit, to have a group that focuses on good governance, and to have a group that focuses on service delivery improvement. I would want to then go to the achievements under accessibility specifically. We are required by Section 182(4) of the Constitution to be accessible to all persons and communities. So there has been a lot of effort to try and do that. Part of it, we used the fact that there was a change of guard to get as much media attention as we could, and the stakeholder consultations were also used to leverage more public awareness on the institution. But specifically, these are the activities that we did, 81 collaboration activities with the other institutions, 245 information sessions, 48 slots obtained in community radio stations, 29 articles on the offers, and then 362 posters and 921 clinics conducted across the country. Stakeholder collaboration was primarily the stakeholder consultative forums, but we also then systematically revisited our exchange strategy with stakeholders, with international stakeholders, and we identified organizational risks. And we monitor risks monthly, which is important for us, especially stakeholders which are organs of state. It's important for us to identify which ones are complying or are assisting us in our work and which ones are giving us trouble, and then making sure that we then have meetings with them and agreements with them on how we're going to do business together. And for that reason, we had several meetings with organs of state, institutions supporting democracy, and certain civil society organizations. Next slide is we've reviewed our business systems, particularly the Chief Executive Officer in the final report will talk to specific measures we did to pay attention to the Auditor General. One of those was really to appoint a competent audit committee, and we're working with them now to make sure that what we are doing complies with the Auditor General. We dealt with the issue of assets, the asset management, which came out strongly last year, amongst other things. Business systems and people. Really, we've dealt with primarily our IT support system, the case management system, SharePoint technology, and upgraded everything there. We're still trying to improve our case management system, and we will indicate that we've asked the Auditor General to do an audit, although they want to charge us, but to just audit us to look at where do we need to augment it. In terms of the people, we have done several measures which include drafting a human resource staff manual, implementing a performance management and development system, and having everyone, or most of our people, virtually everyone has signed their performance agreement. And we've conducted staff workshops on issues around disease management and life skills, and conducted health awareness and the likes, just basically wellness. We've included their selected reports. Honorable Chair, some of the key ones are the ones that are highlighted on this page. I'm not going to read the rest. One of the reports that was published that would like the House to note is a report on the construction of the Nandoni Dam, which negatively affected communities. We're highlighting it because it has not yet been implemented. The others were issues just around duplication of IDs by the Department of Home Affairs. And then from the South African Police, there was a case of somebody wrongly held liable for the payment of DNA tests. There was also a case in the SAPS, which you'll see inside here, where the police failed to investigate, and after the report, they investigated and prosecuted people. We've dealt with mediating a land sale dispute with the Department of Public Works, and intervened in the delay to process payment of deceased members' pension to spouses, which is the kinds of cases we get, really, would be cases around IDs, SASA, and delays in the payment of government employees, the pension fund. Just looking there in terms of the reports, we've just selected a sample from the Eastern Cape. You can see one dealt with the appointment of headmen by an MEC, so appointment of traditional leaders. It's one of the areas that is increasingly being brought to the office. There was one on an alleged failure by an MEC and head of department to comply with relevant provisions of the Public Service Act. This is staffing. This is failure to comply with staffing requirements. On the Free State, there was a corruption case, really, where a check meant for a person from the master's office. A check meant for one person was not deposited to the right person. Free State Youth Commission, there was an allegation that a political rally had been funded, and the expenditure amounted to the misappropriation of funds. But the public protector did not really uphold the complaint. What happened was it was those said that shouldn't happen. As a practice, there should be separation of party and state. Because even if it's not illegal, but it might be improper. Gauteng, there was allegations, I've discussed this case. This is the case where the police had failed to investigate, but investigated after the report. There was a failure to pay leave gratuity to a former educator. In Limpopo, there was a case of an old age grant that was illegally terminated. And there's also the Nandoni Dam that we spoke about. There was a delay in the submission of pension documents of an ex-employee. That's a standard problem that we have of a government employee pension documents not submitted on time, and then resulting in the delay of payment of a government pension. In the Northwest, there was a case of allegation of improper administration of the Mooifontein animal pound owned by government, although the part of the allegation was upheld and part was not. In the Western Cape, there was an allegation that someone was injured by a syringe. It was really an environmental case. It was a case of environmental management, poor environment, and it was a case of environmental waste plus subsequent improper conduct by staff members of the JF York State Hospital when this person complained or came to hospital for assistance. Other organs of state that we dealt with was the CCMA, which failed to issue awards on time. It's one of the cases we get regularly. The ICT's failure to investigate allegations of police brutality. The South African Nation Council allegations of undue delay in registering foreign healthcare professionals. It's another area where there is. And then there was lastly a case of the NPA was alleged to have failed to assist a family that of a missing person. The missing person's task force failed to facilitate a presumption of death process and to assist a complainant to then claim for reparation and special pensions. All of this has now since been done by the NPA after the report. In municipalities, these are the main issues that we dealt with. It was the failure of Tshwane Metro to properly implement a council resolution on land sale in Lady Selborne. Lady Selborne is like Sophia Town, where people were moved previously, and then a redress process took place, but then an allegation that that redress process excluded some people unfairly. There was also a case of a Tshwane Metro protection of identity or failing to or alleged to have failed to protect the identity of whistleblowers. Whistleblowers are becoming a very important part of promoting good governance. There was a case of Matsikima municipality where allegations were that the municipality had failed to develop language policy that takes into account the interests of Xhosa and English-speaking residents, and there was a tendency to communicate in Afrikaans. There was a case from Kai Harib municipality where there was an allegation that was an irregular and improper resale of land already sold to the complainant by the municipality. At Stichete municipality, there was an allegation that the municipality ignored all written correspondence and representations a complainant had made regarding the municipality's alleged failure to perform some of its statutory duties. Then we had several cases. We had a report from the Office of the Unemployment Insurance Commissioner, which was undue delay. It's a typical example. It's a typical case. Compensation Fund, we did a systemic investigation into systemic deficiencies in the operation of the fund in order to identify root causes of complaints. And this has helped, according to the officer, has helped. Whilst we still get a whole lot of complaints from the Compensation Fund, but some of the recommendations are being implemented. All initiative investigations were the following. Western Cape Education Department, there was an alleged undue delay to attend to conditions at the Genside Primary School in Michel's Plain. The investigation came from a newspaper. In Northwest, there was an investigation into an alleged failure to pay someone who had provided transportation to learners. At Tembisile municipality, there was an investigation regarding the failure to address a dangerous situation arising from the construction of a stormwater pipe in Moloto village. Settlements. In future, Honorable Chairperson, we are going to give a report, not just on reports, but on also on settlements, because a lot of these disputes are now being subjected to a proper ADR process, and very good settlements are coming out of that process, a process which is led by the Deputy Public Protector, which is trying to systematize alternative dispute resolution. Basically, a whole lot of these complaints were resolved in this particular matter. The report will tell you some of them dealt with small business people who are owed by the state, would have had to go to court, but through this process, their millions were unlocked and they got paid by the state. But also just simple things like someone's relative being buried by the state improperly. This process has allowed negotiations that have made the state exhume the person and have the family bury the person appropriately. We also devoted some effort towards monitoring the implementation of funding or findings in reports and settlement agreements. A special report has been prepared for this purpose, Honorable Chairperson and members. I've already indicated what the key strategic objectives were now for the previous year. There were five, and I'm now going to go quickly to report specifically on what were the achievements against each of those strategic objectives, because that's the reason why we got money, the 106 million that was given to us, Honorable Chair, last year. It was against these strategic objectives. The first one was to enhance international participation. Several activities there took place. Particularly, the Public Protector is playing a lead role in the African Ombudsman and Mediators Association, and it plays some role in the International Ombudsman Institute. So activities related to that, basically attending conferences, for example, the 9th International Ombudsman Institute World Conference in Stockholm in June, and a bicentennial celebration of the Swedish Ombudsman, that is the 200 years of the Swedish Ombudsman.
Sorry, could I just suggest, I mean, the slides now that you're going through largely seem to be the same as pages 47 to 63 of the report, which I think we would have then read. So I think if you could
summarize on
these particular pages on the performance. I know it is important. Generally, the other presentations we've had this week, the KPIs and the responses are in the report, but people haven't focused on them because they've been taken as read.
Right. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I've just indicated the international work really was, I think, IOMA work and then interaction with other ombudsman institutions through exchange work. The Public Protector basically provides a whole lot of training opportunities and exchange information to other institutions. On the next one, which is on the next page, the main issue was really popularizing the Public Protector's work, and through media briefings, events, stakeholder consultations, etc. I'll get to the next one, which was to establish an effective relationship with stakeholders. We've listed there the departments that I wouldn't say that they don't cooperate. Maybe I would like to call to just correct that, Honorable Chair. It's basically where there's been a bit of problems in terms of getting answers fast, and that has been corrected through meeting with them and reaching agreements. Then I'm going to go to establish the media as a critical partner. We've already indicated what we did there, which is media briefings, media releases, etc. Then to establish strategic partnerships with stakeholders, it was primarily the stakeholder workshops and then bilaterals with stakeholders. And with your permission, Chairperson, I would like then to go to what did you do to achieve an effective integrated internal and external communication strategy? We had a draft communication strategy, which now we had to review it in the light of the changes in the organization and in the light of the stakeholder consultations. We are in the process of now finalizing it. Now, straight into the investigations. I've already given that information on the investigations, Honorable Chairperson and members, which is how many cases we received and how many we dealt with. That's what the next slide deals with. It just gives you the numbers of what was finalized. Own were 12, systemic were 9, just for the information of members, and the total report were 44. Remedial action, we intensified our efforts of monitoring implementation of reports and settlement agreements. Then go to implementation of recommendations, which is part of the remedial action. We have our own quarterly report, but we also have submitted a special report to Parliament, which is something we'd like to do in the future. To raise awareness on the mandate of the public protector, there were several activities there, Honourable Chair, which have already been covered previously. Taking services of the Office of the Public Protector to communities, we've given you numbers there of the clinics that we conducted and other outreach activities. And then lastly, it was really internally, what did we do to improve our systems? As I indicated previously, it was a case, we reviewed our case management systems, we have revisited our financial systems, and we have reorganized ourselves structurally and in terms of work. Structurally, it's separating early resolution from the others and separation good governance and anti-corruption investigations from the service delivery ones. And reorganization of work is mostly to specialize work grouped people according to departments. And then we also have improved on our own good governance, which is making sure we comply with applicable legislation and treasury regulations, identifying organizational risks and dealing with those, improving on security management, and finally, we got an unqualified audit. The organizational structure has been reviewed to align it with the strategy, as I've indicated. And then the other area is monitoring institutional performance, which is really through quarterly reporting, which we've now moved it to actually monthly monitoring, because the Auditor General wanted us to intensify our monitoring. To ensure the implementation of our service charter was withdrawn or was kept in abeyance because we had to change the strategy first so that we can have a service charter that is aligned to the strategy, and it was shifted to the next financial year, which now it has now finally been reviewed. Organizational memory is something that we've worked with through knowledge management improvements. The next one was integrated HR strategy and policies. That has been done. To install a conducive environment to support a high performance culture has been primarily through performance agreements. Ensure that organizational values are displayed in the behavior of employees. But we were going to review a code of conduct, which we didn't do. What we did was we had a symposium that sought to align organizational values and behavior with the strategy, and the code of conduct was shifted to this year. And then further development and review of implementation of the employee wellness program, that was done. Vacancies, we have indicated what the vacancy rate is. It's about 4.5%. And the next slide indicates the vacancy rate by salary band. And then the next slide indicates an annual turnover by salary band. What is important there is that our turnover, our staff turnover is primarily within the skilled area, meaning there's high competition there. And we have a very flat organization, so there isn't enough movement. Once somebody becomes a director, they're going to be a director for life or a deputy director for life. And then we've shown the occupation, the staff occupation distribution, staff distribution by occupational category. That's what you see in the next one, and then in the next one. International relations I've already covered, Honorable Chairperson. I think to be noted by Parliament is that we are grateful to the Department of International Relations and a cooperation for $3 million that they gave us to implement or to establish an African Ombudsman Research Center in Durban. And we will be launching that in November, at the end of November, firstly. Conclusions, Honourable Chair and members. The complaints that we received in the past year, they highlighted the serious challenges in regard to service delivery and good governance. A lot of the complaints were around the service failure in relation to basic necessities of life, which have implications for development, like identity document, social grants, government pension fund, and local government service delivery. So that's something we'd like Parliament to note for the purposes of making sure that government can try and address those, because they have an implication in terms of meeting government's own development goals, but primarily Millennium Development Goals. There was also a considerable number of investigations around conduct failure, which would be corruption and ethical conduct. And those kind of complaints were around tender irregularities, abuse of power, and obviously abuse of resources, particularly abuse of power in the management of people, which again results in government losing a lot of money because most of the cases are lost in the CCMA and in the courts. Local government particularly needs a lot of attention when it comes to administrative failures, systematic administrative failures inside, because what we found was that the service failures that you see outside were just symptoms of a failure of systems inside and the failure of governance. Going forward, our new strategic plan has a twin pronged approach, which is one is righting the wrong of each individual, at the same time facilitating systemic administrative and governance improvements with a view to minimizing demand and generally promoting good governance. We've also thought that in the past year our experience was that it highlighted the importance of partnerships with other oversight agencies in terms of doing certain things together, and that's partly why this year we had the Good Governance Conference to try and address that. What we'd like to place before Parliament are our key challenges. One is the issue of resource constraints. We were given 1.106 million, Honourable Chairperson. This year we have 112 million. It's grossly inadequate, particularly for having an adequate number of investigators, adequate skills within investigators, but also it's inadequate for the purposes of access, of expanding access as required by Section 182(4) of the Constitution. Honourable Members, thank you for the opportunity to address you. It's been a good year. We didn't achieve all that we wanted to achieve, but I think we made good progress and we learnt some valuable lessons which we are now trying to improve the way we do business. Where we would like to be assisted is on the issue of resources and on the issue of better cooperation from organs of state. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Who's going to do the
financial statements.
I will add one other question. I won't go more on what the public protector has touched on, except to say that, of course, we had the qualification address. We have addressed those queries. We now have a clean audit report, although there are some issues that we are attending to. Also, we are working on fine-tuning our performance reporting, as we have seen, to ensure that next year or this year we don't get any qualification on that. Basically, we had four programs on investigations, executive management, outreach, and corporate support services. I'm not going to dwell in except to highlight the budget in terms of the 106 million the public protector has referred on, and how much was allocated per program, and how much was spent, and what has been expenditure rate, and what available budget is. Basically, as members will see, we don't have anything to carry on our mandate this financial year. We're just halfway through, but we really, really are working under very, very serious financial constraints in terms of discharging our mandate. From all the work that we have seen, the 106 is literally a drop in the ocean. It's basically a drop in the ocean from the 108. Obviously, that's the round figure, putting everything in there. Our investigators have about 93 investigators, and if we were to divide that number of 16,000 cases, it means each investigator has a workload of about 100 cases, which far exceeds maybe twice the number of what the international trend is in respect of the organizations of this nation throughout the world. Obviously, the personal expenditure exceeds the budget, as the public order has indicated. That's basically because of the skill nature of the work that we do. Also, the provisions that we are making, already we are making a public protector gratuity payment for 2016, and when she completes her term for office, that also puts strain, something that needs Parliament to take into account and to note the provisions that is being made. We also have the issue of the deputy public protector that needs to be addressed, that will need some more money, and that may even involve the back pay for her as well. If we'd like Parliament to, or the Portfolio Committee to look at it as quick as they can, because we have already submitted head terms and conditions as well. And of course, the accrued performance bonus of the staff and their best aid bonuses as well. I won't dwell much more on what is in the annual report in respect of our financial statements. We have highlighted the Auditor General's report on page 89, the performance statement of financial performance, page 98 of the annual report. In fact, we have indicated exactly where each item appears on the final on the annual report, whereby members who have interest in any particular one can go on and look at it. There are the challenges that we have to highlight as quick as we can. Of course, it's the implementation of the approved structure. We already have the structure that has been approved by this Parliament and by Treasurer, but we've been told that there has never been any appropriation for funds for us to implement the structure, and it may probably, business of finance may probably do it in November. So we definitely would like to appeal upon members of this committee to see to it that happens, because it can alleviate the hardship we're presently facing in respect of the capacity in the office as well. The implementation of the second phase of OSD was also mentioned as well, and the upgrading of our entire system can really, really help us in the improvement of the efficiency of the office. We have made some savings as well to alleviate the problems among ourselves that we have. As you can see, the number of delegations of the people that came in today is drastically reduced. We are now sharing secretaries. We don't even renew office plans anymore in the office. We don't renew any contracts for the cell phones as well. We ensure that members don't stay in their houses within their provinces where they can as well. We've asked each and every staff to identify some savings that they can make as well and put that as part of the performance agreement. The conferences, we're restricting the conferences that we're attending, except those that relate to the achievement of our mandate as well. The catering, we've cut short of it. We're trying to look at implementing the video conferencing. Having 19 provincial offices will mean that members or provincial representatives will have to travel to an office for our meeting. So if we were to get an approval to put this video conferencing, that can reduce our expenditure. We are monitoring the telephone expenditure. We are minimizing the use of consultants, trying to use the skills that we have in the office. I've mentioned something about the plans and what we are doing to ensure that the CFO also monitors the way we do our monthly expenditures. We've tried to diversify the people that we have in terms of skills, that some of the vacancies that we have we don't fill, but we try to multi-skill our own people. For instance, Northwest, we inherited the former Botswana Ombudsman Office. Those type of people, as they retire, we don't replace them as well. Currently facing some unfunded mandates, obviously is the 2.8 million for this pages of the video conferencing, which we presented to Treasury as well, being our key cost-saving measure that we need to get. The governance conference that was necessary for us to put on, fortunately here we had half of it being funded by Commonwealth, is still on today. The development of the new communication strategy, the creation of the new offices, the cost of living for annual adjustment 6.3, waiting for the signing of the agreement and direction from public service administration, the way we have to implement this, because we benchmark the payment to our staff against the public service. You know, the public protector has referred to the dramatic increase of the cases since she has taken office, and with the popularization of the use of the public office, of the public protector's office, and we find out that there's such a huge increase in terms of the work, but unfortunately there's no increase in terms of the staff. So we're getting our people getting stressed, having to handle twice of what they've been handling. The honourable members will remember that when the office was created 15 years ago, it had a 47 million budget. Now as the office keep on progressing, a number of other legislation the public protector has referred to keep on being enacted by this parliament, but without adding any amount or any budget for the purpose of taking. For instance, the best investigators will spend more time on the members' executive ethics act to discharge that. But when that act was passed, nothing was done to ensure that the Office of the Public Protector is resourced to cater for that particular legislation. It has been historical, 10%, 10%, 10%, despite the fact the number of legislation kept on coming and being implemented. So it is the new management, the new public protector that is paying, and the investigators that are paying the price for such for not being foresighted such things happening. So we really have a huge challenge in terms of the work that we do. Recently we had to do a joint investigation with the Special Investigative Unit. You find out that they have such a massive a budget compared to us. We had to rely more on their resources that they have for us to carry on our mandate, because we just don't have the resources for that. And there's been, maybe I'll say three times the number of increase of the cases that can be reflected in this financial year since the new public protector took office. We have obviously the area rentals, which caused the qualification last year, that we have to paid to the Department of Public Works. They could not write it off. SCOPA insisted that we have to find this man and pay that $5 million, which has been not our fault, but what happened between them and the Department of Justice, which is handling our budget. Obviously, we need that $38 million for the implementation of the revised structure that will make us cater for the needs that we have, which has been approved, but they said it has not been appropriated as yet. We thought that if we can have the interns in the office, that can alleviate the problems that we have in the office. So those are the unfunded mandate that we currently carry at the moment. Thank you, members, for the presentation.
So thanks very much. To members then, questions? JB, Debbie, Anne.
JB sounds like Davey. Say JB first. No, it's not the same. Chairperson, thank you very much. To commend the Office of the Public Protector, and more so my specific area will be on page number 8, where it states that the services of the Public Protector are free and include a toll-free line for telephone complaints, and that the complaint may also be lodged directly at the Office of the Public Protector in all 9 provinces, and they can write to the website there. And this is so amazing, because to reach as broadly as possible all the poor, the people who may be sort of downtrodden. As the reporter said, that the Public Protector is a buffer before the state and the citizen. You know, I'm concentrating on the people who are staying on farms, for example. You see, when that person stays behind the mountain or above or on the side of the river, and then he's on the receiving side of the farmer, the person should not believe that he is like a property, the farmer owns him. There should be a door or someone to whom that person can cry. For example, you'll recall that municipalities in the past, they were just dorps, very urban, and nothing in the farms. But now we are wall to wall. So I should think that the outreach, we appreciate it when the outreach goes as far as if a person is there on the farm, as the farmer say, the grainy meal water of me blast me, and then that person must know that at least the municipality can come in and bring water, whatever service. In other words, government, the one that I voted for, can do some service for me. And then secondly, also the issue of your office being handling matters in a form of an ADR. I heard you saying that the Office of the Deputy Public Protector has been doing a lot of such things. I think it is more than waiting to see either litigation or any actions of that side, where there can be some matters resolved in a more and quick manner. And then you said that there are 2,987 matters that fell outside the jurisdiction, and then some of them you were just giving advice and others you were referring. My question is on the point of referring. Most of them, where were they referred? Were they referred to other Chapter 9 institutions or other offices? I just want to get a broad idea as to when the people go to the Office of the Public Protector, they may be making a mistake to say the public protector is the one who must assist, and then your answer will tell us what type of those issues that are frequently coming to your office. And then, well, I think the issue, Chairperson, of the deputy public protector, it remains our responsibility as the committee. We need to look at it when we discuss the reports next week. And I was the ad hoc chairperson when the deputy was appointed. I think I will volunteer to say, let's do something. Let's do something.
We'll take a number of questions.
So,
thank
you, Ms. Schaefer.
Thank you, not Debbie. Sorry, Public Protector, that you'll get to see that I ask lots of questions, I'm afraid. Just quickly, just more a general point for information. How do you decide on your own initiative investigation? Do you just react to media reports, or how does it work? And it also seems you're trying to create, you know, promote yourself quite a bit in the media. Do you take media with you normally when you go on visits and so on? Page 90, I see that your finance man, Mr. Mtetwa, very conveniently skipped over all the horrible comments in the Auditor General on pages in page 90 and onwards. What have you done about all these issues? I mean, it's quite a damning statement to say the accounting officer did not ensure that the public protector has and maintains an effective, efficient and transparent system and internal controls. And on page 93, it says the public protector does not have competent individuals who understand the financial reporting framework. That's quite a nasty thing to say. What is your reaction to that? What have you done about it? Yes, but congratulations on the fact that at least it's not qualified. That is at least some progress. Can you just enlighten us what your focus week is that you spoke about? What is it, and how often do you have it? What do you do? Where do you go? And how does it fit into your mandate? Your question of finances, if I understood you correctly, you said that people get two bonuses a year, in which case I'm not surprised you haven't got money. You said a birthday bonus and a performance bonus. Please clarify, hopefully that means that if they get a birthday bonus, they don't also get a performance bonus. If they get a performance bonus, they don't also get a birthday bonus, I hope. And the other thing is, could you just also maybe think of in future indicating in your report what responses you get or don't get from organs of state, so we can try and follow that up better. And then lastly, just I'm afraid I have to raise this one, but on the issue of the ANC Youth League investigation, you have said it's not appropriate, but it's not illegal. But what concerns me is the statement made that you know, there was no misappropriation of funds and there was no benefit. But in the same report, you state that there was significant media attention and there were basically only ANC politicians there, so in itself that is a benefit. And secondly, the fact that you're combining a political event with a non-political event, you're going to, of necessity, obtain cost savings. So even if you don't directly benefit in that sense, you certainly will be benefiting, actually even financially, by that. And I would like your comments on that. Thanks.
There is there are some organs of state that you say they are not cooperating with the public protector. So what I want to know is what are you doing, or what have you done about that? Because really that is touching the purpose of the public protector. There are also some organs of state you have listed as the top 5 or top 10 where the most of the complaints are coming from. Have you engaged the people responsible or relevant and then brought this to their attention in these departments? There is also again another question regarding international participation. There is an exchange strategy that you say is being implemented. What I want to know is exactly what is that study, what is actually taking place regarding that. You know, service delivery is one of the worst challenges that are facing this country. And then in your report, you are saying that there is a service delivery charter that has already been implemented and reviewed. I want to know now, what are the problems you are facing, or what is the reason that was not implemented and reviewed by yourselves? And then my learned friend, my colleague next to me, my colleague next to me really has already stated my greatest concern. That is the report of the attorney of the Auditor General. Thou really, you do have an unqualified report. This is not a good report. And okay. Let me not go to it. Actually, I prepared questions in each and every item that I felt I have to. But actually, the whole report is just not good. So what I want to know is what are you going to do about this? Thank you, Honourable Chairperson.
Have you got anything at this point? Later, okay. Look, from my side, and this may be assist. I would want to suggest to the committee that the response to the Auditor General's concerns, the emphases, that we actually get in writing. I think it's important enough for that if we have it verbally, we've got no effective record of it. And if you look at what other departments had, what the department had done, particularly the Department of Justice, it was slightly worse. They had a qualified audit, but they'd taken each section, and it had, this is what the Auditor General said, this is what we've done. Okay. Or plan to do. So I think give us that. If you've got it, fine, but give us that. You can maybe briefly respond, but I just think it's good that you've come from a qualified audit to an unqualified one, but we don't want to see you slipping back. And I think give us that. Then to Mr. Mtetwa, the last section of the financial statements of your presentation. It wasn't in the annual report. So we're hearing it for the first time, and it's important. You should make it, but I'm concerned that you haven't given us enough information. In order to one of the things we've got to look at next week is should they get more money. I'm worried you haven't given us enough information to be able to consider that case. And I think the issue, I mean, for example, it struck me that your teleconferencing system, the 2.8, which is unfunded, would save you money in the long term. But I think there would be an area of there are areas, I mean, we're all facing a crisis, funding crisis. Department of Justice can't build the number of courts that they should. Human Rights Commission is flying economy. I don't know if you are. Things like that. And I think it would be, and obviously staff retention is important, and I think the point is important that you make. Your staff retention is quite good given the fact that you are such a small organization, so if you get onto the higher levels, your chances of getting higher are limited, and people then want to get higher and go elsewhere. But, you know, could you be cutting back on your expansion? One gets the sense that you are expanding, which is good, but can you expand in these economic times? You obviously need to expand to deal with the complaints, but should you be opening new offices, things like that? But I think, can you again give us more detail on the case for why you should get, why we should ask for you to get more money? And it would be linked to what you're doing to cut back. You put that, but basically the problem was that there's no other document on it. You gave it in a slide presentation report, which obviously by its nature has to be brief. So please give us something more substantial, because we're going to be considering it next week. We've got to on that one say, can we get that by, somebody must work, you want more money, somebody must work over the weekend on it, so can we get it by Tuesday morning at the latest. Then my other concern was just on the issue of the cases. And I think it would be useful, you know, you've given us effectively an anecdotal sense of the cases that you're dealing with in the annual report. I would have preferred, and then you make statements about the problems with the different government departments, and that the worst offender is Justice, the committee that we are overseeing. Now, I think that with the department that we're overseeing, I think one, it would be useful if there's more detail on the categorization of the complaints. So I found the legislation that requires you to do things useful. I would have liked to have seen, so you probably don't have it now, it's statistical, but can we get it, a breakdown of, okay, executive ethics, okay, that had high publicity, these are the number of cases we've done. Whistleblowers. Sorry? Yeah, okay, but yeah, no, look, I'm saying everything, but I'm saying whistleblowers, how many? You gave us one anecdote of an anecdotal case of a whistleblower. How many have you got? What are the other ones that was quite interesting? The housing thing, you know? I would just, National Home Builders Association registration, disputes under PIA. Violations under the combating of corrupt activities, but basically on page your slides aren't numbered, but where you've got the legislation, can you get a breakdown for the past year of which cases, how many cases did you deal with in each matter? Then with justice, and I think it would probably apply to, maybe there should be further engagement, not just with us, but with other committees on how Parliament can assist, but with justice, okay, you said a lot of the problems were late judgments. That would be probably then more JSC and Magistrates Commission. But it would be very useful, it would be, if we are going to assist, which we should, because there are problems that need to be addressed, we need to have the detail. You haven't given us the detail. And the same would apply to any other department. So your list of poor performers. I mean, I was surprised that one of them was the Law Committee, the Legal Aid South Africa, who presented here on Tuesday. We were very impressed with them. Now, I don't know. Apart from Public Protector, you're saying that you know, what is it? Following organisms that do not cooperate. But we've got. I vaguely thought of SMSing the CEO to say. Do you know this is what the Public Protector says about you? Then I thought, no, it probably would create an unnecessary war. But we need, if we're going to take it up with them, we need to know what are the complaints about. And the same would apply to, okay, you've got Register of the High Court, Joburg. That's under us as far as oversight. What is happening? The detail. ICD. You know, the police portfolio committee, they're very active. Ms. Schaefer was from there, so she knows it better than I do. It would be useful to even if you don't give it to them verbally, but give it to them physically, a report saying these are our problems with ICD. They have ICD coming there regularly, but to then for them to be able to, when Francois Bierkman goes there, to be able to say, by the way, the Public Protector is complaining about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. SASA with social development, you know, all of them basically. Compensation Commissioner would be Labour, wouldn't it? But basically what I'm saying is I don't think you're, you know, I think it was the same problem with the Human Rights Commission yesterday, but I don't think you're putting, you're giving us information to in a form that we can assist. So definitely from the Justice Committee, you say that most of the complaints are against the Department of Justice. So for this portfolio committee, I think we need to know exactly what are the problems. Give it to us in give us an analysis of the complaints that are coming in, both the complaints and I mean, look, you may have some that are not within your jurisdiction, so people might try and use you as an appeal mechanism, which they can't do. But tell us what the problems were, what the resolutions were, and then maybe tell us what you think we should be doing about it. Because we can call in the Magistrates Commission, we can call in the JSC or the Chief Justices or whatever to respond. And similarly with legal aid, you know, we had the legal aid South Africa here. We could have raised those questions had we known the information. So I think on the complaints, what I'm basically saying is just I it would be good if you could be more statistical and analytical about the complaints and less anecdotal. The anecdotes are useful. You get a sense from the anecdotes. So I'm not saying don't put them in, but you don't get the bigger picture. And then please tell Parliament in more detail where the problems are. Basically those. So I think let's do that for the first round. If you can then respond on those.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and thank you to Honourable Members for the comments and the questions. The first set of questions came from Mr. Sibanyoni. And the one question there from Mr. Sibanyoni was the cases that fall outside our jurisdiction, who have we referred them to? Most of the cases that, okay, they fall into our jurisdiction, but Section 6.3 of the Act gives me discretion to decide whether we'll resolve it or there's a better forum that can resolve it. These cases, most of the cases, will go to the Inspector General of Prisons, but I'm just going to check the actual numbers. But most, just on a day-to-day basis, most of my referral letters are into the, did I say Inspector General? No, Judicial Inspectorate of Prisons. Most of the cases go to the Judicial Inspectorate of Prisons. The second batch of cases goes to the ICD. I would say, which ones do I send to the Inspector to the Judicial Inspectorate are prisoners. Prisoners just complain, you know, habitually every day about medical conditions, a rude water, or a letter that wasn't sent to a place it was supposed to be sent to. It's those kinds of complaints. Occasionally, it's really serious concerns about a prisoner having been harmed or assaulted, or at once somewhere in Limpopo there was an unrest that affected prisoners. So those I would refer to the Judicial Inspectorate. But those that concern the operations of correctional services themselves, management of people, we deal with ourselves. The second group of complaints goes to the ICD. That involves police conduct, police brutality, failure of police to investigate matters, and allegations of corruptions occasionally in the police. These I refer to the ICD. Every time we do a referral, I still keep a watching brief. So I would say, please investigate this matter and favor me with a response. And then later we keep them in a system where we can later then try to find out. A few matters would be human rights matters, and those would be sent to the Human Rights Commission. Some would be human rights matters but gender related, and they are sent to the CGE, but we will give a breakdown. We will try and give a breakdown if we can. I think I'm done with the with your questions, Honourable Member Sibanyoni. Honourable Member Sheffer, how do we decide on an on investigation? We have a process. Usually an on investigation, one of the investigators picks up a story in the media or if they live in a community, they see that there are trenches that have been dug on the road and people are falling all over and nobody's doing something about it, they take it up. They write a motivation, a whole memo motivating why this matter deserves an own investigation. And this then is submitted to the executive committee, which is myself, the DPP, and the CEO, to look at that. Well, having gone through the system in terms of the executive manager of each unit, the things that we look at, we look at whether the person, if it involves only one person, we look at whether that person is so disadvantaged that they're not able to raise the matter on their own. We also look at how systemic is the problem. If we address it, will we address a systemic service delivery problem or ethical problem in that particular community? And we also obviously look at the kind of harm that is being caused to the community, which would be the cost of the investigation versus the harm that we're trying to fix. I must indicate, though, Honourable Member, we don't do as many own investigations as we should and could because we have limited resources. People at the moment can't deal with the workload that they have, and it's always a very difficult decision to say, will we or will we not do this own investigation? The media, do we always take the media when we go and deal with the case to promote ourselves? No, Honourable Member, we don't. Ordinarily, actually, a lot of our cases, the media doesn't even know that we're dealing with them. Usually matters in the media go into the media when they're political, when a political party is involved or some community agency that has a high media interaction. They're the ones who usually take it in the media. But we have an open policy. Once it's in the media, the decision in my office is that we engage instead of stonewalling. We engage, but we won't engage about the specifics of the investigation, but we'll engage to say we are doing the investigation. This is who has lodged it, and this is what it is all about. About the Good Governance Week itself, while I've dealt with cases, we do have a media briefing quarterly, where we release then a batch of all the investigations we've done during that quarter and try to indicate what those cases were all about and what the impact of the investigations has been. What have we upheld? What complaints we did not uphold? The Public Protector Good Governance Week, its aims and its relevance to the mandate. Let me start with the relevance. The relevance is the Public Protector Good Governance Week is relevant to our mandate in two ways. One is in terms of our constitutional mandate and our strategic objective number 3, we seek to promote good governance, and the Public Protector Week tries to highlight that notion of good governance and mobilize civil society's partners in holding the state accountable in promoting good governance. But the key objective really is marketing. If you look at the strategy where it is actually placed, it's placed under accessibility to all persons and communities, because that is required in terms of Section 182.4. We are constitutionally required to be accessible to all persons and communities. And we don't have enough resources to do that. We do outreach, we do clinics, we do occasional media, but we decided during our strategic planning process to have a focus week where we can try and capture the attention of the nation as a whole around what is the public protector, what does it do, what services does it provide, how do you access it. And that has been the objective of the Public Protector Week. We will obviously assess and see. The original plan was we have 48 million South Africans. Let's try and reach 30 million through our outreach and communications initiative, which actually answers some of the problems you're talking about, Honorable Sibanyoni, when you're saying there are people who are in the far, far rural areas. We do clinics, but sometimes it's so far. People don't reach South Africa back to back. The aim of the Public Protector Good Governance Week is that eventually during that week we will do South Africa back to back. There will be no village that is not reached by our activities. It will be an annual week. We included in that this year, and now we're going to do it annually, a component that deals with overlaps between oversight agencies and the need to work together. So we had a good governance conference as well, where we invited all the other oversight agencies to talk about how do we do. It is amazing that even amongst ourselves, we're not quite sure who does what. I know when I started, I used to just throw things at the Judicial Inspectorate as long as they dealt with business. Anything that dealt with the police, it would go to the ICT, etc. And several matters, we would think, okay, why don't we ask the SIU to do it? I even asked the Auditor General once if he could help with the forensic investigation, only to find they don't do that. So it's actually talking together, we found out exactly what is the extent of each institution's mandate, and what are the limits of the mandate, and how do we leverage our powers and our resources to make a better impact, which was part of what the Kader Asmal report had also required us to do. The issue of bonuses, a performance bonus and a birthday bonus, I think it's the words we use. I will ask the CEO to deal with it. It's the words we use, because birthday bonuses, it's not really a real bonus, it's really your 13th check. But I will ask the CEO. It's not really an extra payment for additional work that we've done, but CEO will answer that, and with the CFO. Honourable Member, you're right about the need. Honourable Shefa, you're right that we should provide better responses, better information about the kinds of responses that we're getting from the state, because Parliament obviously is really the most important oversight body. We are oversight agencies. Parliament is the ultimate oversight body. When we reach a dead end, we should be able to rely on Parliament, but then, yes, we should then provide information on what exactly it is that is not happening or that's happening. And in the special report, we have done that, but in this report, I do acknowledge, Honourable Member, that we haven't been fully specific. Other than to say, most of the departments that we're complaining about is they don't provide us with information on time. And that prevents speedy resolution of cases. And in our strategic plan, we've promised prompt remedial action. The other thing is some of them don't implement our reports on time, and a few don't implement at all, but very few. But yes, we do need to spell it out exactly which ones, what are the percentages. Up until now, our case management system was not providing all of that information. We're now feeding all of that information so that it can come out on the other side. On the ANC Youth League matter, I think your observations, Honourable Member, are fair, but our findings were also fair in that we're saying in the circumstances it was not unlawful to do what they were doing. The one was going to have an event, the other was going to have an event. They said, let's maximize our resources. But it did leave a bad taste, and that the report does say that we have appealed to government through that report and through our interaction with stakeholders to separate state from party, because it discourages other people from coming to the event when they're not sure whether it's a state event or it's a party event. So, but we've just appealed to the state to honestly review that kind of thing and say, yes, it may be lawful, but is it appropriate in an inclusive democracy? Honourable Member Ntabane, you've asked us what have we done about the departments that we say are not cooperating, particularly the ones that we have listed. That also goes to the comment that has been made by the Honourable Chairperson about the Legal Aid Board. Firstly, when I say they're not cooperating, it's primarily, as I've said, they don't respond on time, or some don't respond at all. We are engaging with them. Sometimes they say they haven't received the letter, meaning their own internal systems are not working. You would be amazed that there are several ministers that have never responded to a single letter that I wrote to them. But it's not because the ministers are being rude. Their systems are such that the bureaucrats take the letter and research, and then whenever they have an answer, then they give it to the minister. Or sometimes they even become the minister themselves and they write to me and tell me, no, they're not going to give me whatever it is that I want. So, but I'm engaging with the ministers, I'm engaging with them, with the chairperson of the Legal Aid Board and others. I've had two meetings now with the chairperson of the Legal Aid Board. I must say the choice of language in our report may have been a little bit unfortunate. At least that's what the chairperson of the Legal Aid Board wrote about it. He wrote me a letter to say, you know, when you're saying they're not cooperating, I think that was a bit, the choice of words was a bit dramatic, because in many ways they are cooperating. Then there are a few cases where they haven't responded on time. But there are just places where you never get an answer in some of these institutions. And we've had meetings with them and we've had MOUs with them. Right now, as I speak, we've had an arrangement with the workers' compensation which has involved an instrument, meetings and then an instrument. We've had arrangements with the Government Employee Pension Fund, Home Affairs, and I think SASA. We have also asked all the institutions that we work with regularly, in some municipalities, to nominate a person, a focal point there, where if we're asking questions, it's better to then interact with that person and say, this is what we're dealing with. And then that person interacts with the minister. And then just now, even with the defense, we've done that. I think MOUs are the way to go, because in the MOU, we normally stipulate we need an acknowledgement within 24 hours. We need a response within a fairly useful response within 7 days and a final response within a particular period of time. And that's what we've done with the top five. I think of the top five, the person we had not managed to meet was the Minister of Justice, but I'm meeting, finally having a meeting with him next week. But that doesn't mean we didn't do something about justice. At a level of administration, we met with the registrars in the courts where there are most problems. In the courts, Honorable Chair, it's not primarily judgments delayed. It's appeals delayed and records. A total record of a hearing disappearing. And we've had instances there where the registrar now says he's going to reconstruct the record, which we don't think is fair, because, I mean, it's difficult for me just to reconstruct a case that I personally listened to, and now the registrar then... So we are going to engage with the minister about that and look at why do we still get records disappearing? A whole court... we're not talking dockets, we're talking where a judge said throughout and then the record has disappeared. I'm not saying, pardon, the proceedings, the record of the proceedings disappearing. But I'm not saying it's like it's every day, but it's quite a number of times. And, you know, even though somebody has been convicted, because usually it's some people who have been convicted, even though they've been convicted, the system is not perfect, and sometimes you find that people have not been correctly convicted, so they need to be given an opportunity to exhaust the entire justice system. What the content of exchange programs is basically a framework for interacting with our counterparts and making sure that we can send people to their countries and they can send people to our country to study each other's systems with a view to building capacity and with a view to borrowing some of their administrative changes and their investigation improvements and vice versa. Honourable Member, the service delivery charter that I was speaking about was our own, where the service charter, you know, it's the Batubili charter that each institution must tell the public what is it going to do, what level of service should be expected, and what to do when service fails. That's our own charter. So there was a draft. It was in the system already. What we needed to do was to review it, and that's what we budgeted for in the strategic plan. So we delayed the review a bit because we wanted to review it in the light of the promises that would be in the strategic plan. And now that has been done, we do have a reviewed charter now, a draft reviewed charter. As I speak, that is in the office now, we're in the process of finalizing, because then if we say prompt remedial action, we want to then the promise to say, what does that mean? What are the processes? If you phone us, what are the levels of, what should we expect? How many times should the phone ring? You write us a letter, when should we expect a response? The case process itself, what is the longest it's going to take to do an investigation, so that the public and Parliament possibly can hold us accountable. But more importantly, it is to inform us as an institution to improve our own services. The Auditor General, Honourable Members, it would appear that we glossed over. I think we didn't, Honourable Members, it's because we were asked to try and not delve on things that are in the report. So we then started to try to then not to go into details of everything. But we have engaged with the Auditor General meaningfully. During the audit, after the audit, we've had several meetings around what are we doing. We've drafted an implementation plan now, and we are already in the process of implementing, because the year started in April, and we are already implementing the changes. A lot of it was around asset management and how do we correctly follow through those assets, but also how do we reflect them on the annual report. And then a whole lot of it was around performance information, providing reliable performance information and sufficient performance information, as you yourself have asked certain questions. So we are working on that. I think maybe the CEO can talk to it a little bit more, but we will provide a document, because there was an agreement that we'll have a document. We also have agreed that we'll have quarterly reviews with the person in the AG who focuses on our department to just keep checking or assisting us. Because the idea, obviously, is to promote good governance. It's not to catch us doing something wrong. It's just to make sure that our own governance systems are fine. So they're assisting us to achieve that. Honourable Member...
On a lighter note, I mean, I think Ms. Schaefer described what was in the what the Auditor General said about being nice. If you really want to look at something that wasn't nice, look at what he said about the NPA.
Now, thank you, Honourable Chair. We don't take it seriously, everything that they said, and that's why we've invited them to work with us, and because I think the AG has said to us as Chapter 9s, when we've met in our Chapter 9 forum, is that we should lead by example. So ideally, we shouldn't be having these things. And we do accept that we will have to jack up our system, so that when we hold the state accountable, the state doesn't look at how can you hold us accountable when your own systems are disastrous. So, but we are doing something about it. Honourable Chairperson, you wanted to know, yes, it was the AG which we have dealt with, and then a fair comment about us not having given you enough information for funding purposes. We will provide that. We do have a document, Honourable Chairperson. We had a memo that was submitted to Cabinet to just explain what the problem is. What I do say in this report, well, I hope it does say, is we really just are not coping with investigations, Honourable Chairperson. I know you asked, should we be expanding? The expansion is twofold. Partly is to bring service closer to communities, because we're not a writing nation. Our people don't write. We're not a nation. Our people also still have difficulty using the technology. But even phoning, you would be surprised that they would pay to come from wherever they are to come and have a one-to-one, because of the oral tradition people come from. So they really want a forum, and that's why we've been pushed and to try and provide regional offices. We, during stakeholder consultations, we've been told have these in every municipality, but we can't do that. What we've tried, what we're exploring now is something with DPSA. They've got a technology, an IT related service, where they have service points, shared service points in some of the areas, and then they also have IT there. We're going to look at whether we can't use those offices as satellites in addition, instead of just focusing on provinces. But our biggest problem, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, is we just don't have enough investigators. The 91 investigators for an institution that has to hold three arms of government accountable, three levels of government, plus parastatals, plus other state-funded entities, it's just not possible. The CEO was talking about the investigation we're doing with the SIU. The best way to investigate is to have a team, because each one of us has blind spots. And when you have a team, there's more energy, there's more skills, there's more focus. And we can't do teams, because my good governance unit, for example, has five people, isn't it? That includes the executive manager, who is the chief director. It has no director at the moment. Okay, we've now just scrambled through and found a director, to hire a director. So we really don't have people on the board, Chair. And we would really appreciate assistance in that regard. So we will give you a case for money, Honourable Chairperson, particularly when it comes to investigations. But we also think for public awareness, for accessibility, we've been asked to do all our things in multi-languages. Like when we were doing Good Governance Week, everything was done in English, and people were saying, why are you published in English only? That needs more money. We need language services, and we need more money, which is something we'll try and do in the future. We're trying to do more with less, honestly, Honourable Chairman. You can check how much you spend on our Good Governance Week and how much government ordinarily spends, and so you can see the difference. Thank you, Chair. You wanted to know, I think that's a fair comment. And I think in the special report, that's what we've done. But in this report, we didn't do that. And we can provide a supplement next week of all the list of cases. It was being prepared, wasn't it? A list of all the cases and calibrated in terms of the Executive Members Ethics Act and this one and that one. I think, yes, that also is going to help to see which of the mandate areas are known by the people and utilized by the people. So I think that we can provide next week, that list. And then and thank you about the suggestion that with all of the problems that we have, we should go to the people. I think the Legal Aid Board, we've met with the chairperson, who has been very helpful. I think part of the problem has been how people read Section 6.3 of the Public Protector Act, which says people must exhaust internal remedies, and the public protector may decline. Sometimes then organs of state think, okay, they think that's a must. They read the may and must and say, no, this person has not exhausted internal remedies, then you shouldn't deal with this case. That's a discretionary power. So sometimes even if a person has not. Then the other thing that has come up is the question of whether the principle of where a matter is currently before a court or the person has indicated an intention to litigate. Other organs of state then think that if the person is already litigating, I shouldn't get involved. Whereas I think the intention of the ombudsman is that if it can be resolved without wasting money, then let it be resolved. And then if that fails, then you can go to court. But we can also provide some of that information to the committee on the poor performers. I don't want to call them poor performers, though. I just want to say we had a few stumbling blocks in getting cooperation from them.
I think we all know that there are challenges with service delivery. So it's not surprising if you have poor performers. You don't need to backpedal here. But I think the issue would be, you did raise the problem of wanting more support or assistance from Parliament. Give us the information, obviously accurate information, to enable us to engage. So you have a lot of complaints about justice. This is the Justice Portfolio Committee. I can't remember if you listed them as one of your poor performers. You did have the registrar of the Joburg Court. Give us the information so that we can engage. And I think the same would then apply to other portfolio committees. A lot of complaints about municipalities. Now, those are, as you know, it's a separate sphere of government. But it would still be useful. I mean, the Honourable Sibanyoni, he's, you know, every person he's spoken to that's come here this week, he's spoken about Ekangala, and so it's generally known that's his constituency. Now, he was shocked to discover, as I was, that they are on the Human Rights Commission's bad list or repeated offenders list for non-performance on PIA. I discovered my constituency, my current constituency, and my former one are there as well. So similarly, if you've got problems with municipalities, maybe inform MPs so that they can deal with it, they can see whether they can assist. But don't wait until it's, you said when you were responding now, coming as a last resort. Don't come as a last resort. Keep us in the loop. Obviously, we don't want to take over your functions as a difference, but where you are having problems, let's hear about it. And then when the officials, if it's a national department, come to Parliament, they can be asked about it. But sorry, I stopped you. I don't know if you'd got any more responses. And
no, Honourable Chairperson, I had finished my part, but I wanted the CEO to respond to some of the issues around finance, particularly the issue of the performance bonus versus the bonus.
Thank you, Public Protector. Thank you, Chair. As I've said in my opening, we benchmark against what is in the Department of Public Service Administration. The annual bonuses, which the Honourable Member relates to level 1 up to 11 employees who ordinarily will get paid their bonuses on the date of birth. And the one from level 12 and above will obviously part of their package and decide to restructure in the manner in which they want. And then we have also, as an incentive for good performance, what we called our performance bonus system, whereby we'll have performance agreements with the people, and we budget a certain amount depending how the organization, in line with the policy, how the organization performs in terms of meeting its strategic objectives. Thereafter, we award those based on the system.
But is that then also for 12 and up?
It's also for 12 and up as well, based on their performance agreements. For instance, you ask about the own initiative investigation. In respect of our investigators, one of the clauses in their performance agreement contract is that at least an investigator should identify at least one own initiative per year as well. So definitely they will. That encourages that we'll be able to pick up some, that we don't have to wait for the public to come to us if we feel that you saw in a newspaper or in a radio somewhere. Yeah, we don't have any resources, but we definitely, some we turn them down, some that we feel that can be done by other agencies, some that we feel that we need to do, we do as well. As the public has said, in some instances we've actually suspended outreach activities because we don't have enough investigators in the Northern Cape, for instance. We just decided that we can't do it anymore. They already have about 500 backlog. We should have to create, do something else, move our own people, some other people to go and clear the backlog. Yesterday, when the public protester every time speaks on the radio, they say, look, I mean, we're already doing outreach by default because every time the public protester speaks, we get flooded with complaints again. So we really have a challenge when it comes to, we can suspend outreach, but automatically it happens. So that's one issue relating to service bonus. In respect of the comments made by the AG, obviously we had a debriefing as an administrator with the AG, and they also met with the executive, with the public protector, the deputy, and myself, whereby we presented our action plan to address each and every. In fact, some of the issues may not have been mentioned in their letter, in their comments on the annual report, but it's mentioned in the management letter which they presented to us. So in respect of each comment they've made, we came with an action plan and the time frame as to when we need to address this. We presented to the public protector and the deputy and the AG as well. They've made some few comments in respect of the time frames and how we can clean and deal in respect of each and everything they've raised, of which we are attending to, and we, as we've been asked, will present this action plan to this committee as well.
Thanks very much. I think then we can close at this point. But just to recap, you'll give us the motivation for more funds. That's the urgent one. And let's add it, I think, say earlier Tuesday morning, but probably say for close of business Monday, so that Mr. Romano can find it on his email or whatever when he gets in on Tuesday morning. Then the additional figures of your response to the Auditor General's concerns, that can come later. I mean, not too much later, but it's less urgent. And the breakdown of the or the more the greater detail on the cases, the breakdown according to the legislation that you're looking at. And then definitely, and this needn't be so urgent, but soon in the next few weeks. A report on justice or the matters relating that are under the department or under this under the oversight of this committee that you are having problems with the 1,000 whatever 900 complaints, the responses or lack thereof from the different sectors, and proposals where you believe that the National Assembly could assist you in terms of getting a great better response or recommendations that you've made implemented or better systems in place. And then we are suggesting that you do the same for other portfolio committees. So don't just target the executive, target the oversight body as well, and that would be the portfolio committees. And then it would also be useful, it's more difficult, that some kind of breakdown on the municipalities as well, so that MPs can also start playing a role if those happen to be in their constituencies. Debbie?
Just want to, on a lighter note, and remind the public protector of her mandate to act without fear or favour, because I think she's got a bit of a fear of comments of people who are being targeted for not performing, and I don't think she should worry about it.
Okay, but then on that lighter note, to thank you for attending and for the presentation. I know Mr. Mtapane said he wasn't that happy with the report, but this is the first report he's seen. He wasn't, unfortunately, able to be with us for the earlier part of the week, so maybe it's a relative thing. But anyway, thanks very much for your time, and if we can have that information, thanks, and to the members, thank you very much. Sorry.
Yes.